With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. Talking about clothing and fitting. That is Nick Wright. You guys look good today. Feel good. Fresh.
Thank you. Before you tell America what's coming up on the show, You look lovely.
Oh, thank you.
See, congrats to you. You alluded to it right there. Like getting back to your playing weight.
Oh, you've been doing the juicing.
You got a date in mind. It's been working out.
The vegetable
good for you. See?
Fruit juicing.
Training camp, man. Training camp's here, man.
Something teams in your in camp brain activated.
And something.
So there you go. Absolutely.
My wife told me you need to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw
a cartoon pictorial of myself, and if that's what I look like through the eyes of other people.
Say it. I'm waiting for you to say it.
I maybe should consider going to the gym once or twice a year. But everyone looks good today. Good to see you guys.
All right. It is a rainy, stormy, nasty day here in New York City, but we've got a lot to brighten you up this morning. We'll get to vindication for Kawhi Leonard, plus big deals for Kevin Love and Todd Gurley. But we are going to start off the program with a couple of elite quarterbacks. The NFL season kicks off in 43 days, but who's counting? Google is. That's how I knew. Training camps underway this week. A lot of attention will be paid to the two best quarterbacks in the league. Tom Brady turning 41 this year, coming off his Super Bowl loss. And Aaron Rodgers coming back after missing 9 games last season with that broken collarbone. Both of these guys tied for first place in starting quarterback rankings by NFL executives. So, C, I'll start the conversation off with you. What sets Brady and Rodgers apart from the rest of the quarterbacks in the NFL?
Well, the number one thing is their overall accuracy with the football. They can put the ball in what we call NFL standards within the proximity of a wide receiver, away from the defender, and also typically giving the offensive player the advantage that they might be able to get yards after the catch. Both of them, they got guts. They make tough throws. Both of them are very, very good leaders. Both of them, as Coach Mangini has coined the phrase, force multiplier. Like when they walk into the room, they don't have to have the best wide receivers. They don't have to have Pro Bowl players. Just give them anyone, and they make those players better. Typically, guys having career years playing with them. The difference between them and the rest of the quarterbacks, the mistakes that they make or that they don't make. Aaron Rodgers is second to none. Well, you wouldn't think that someone with the arm talent that Aaron Rodgers would have would have the type of accuracy and be very careful with the football. So it's not just Aaron Rodgers' arm talent, which is second to none as far as NFL history, but his decision-making, where he puts the ball, and he doesn't turn the football over. You're going to always have a chance playing with Aaron because of he's so so precise with the football and so careful.
As opposed to the guy who did it before him, you know, Brett Favre, who
that's
was so of, great.
That's one of the big. That's
mistake.
One of the big differences. And if you look at the difference between Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, it will be some of the passing yardage, but it will be those interceptions.
To your point on the interceptions on Rodgers, it's been 8 years since he threw more than 8 interceptions in a season, which is laughable. Like, when you think about how often he throws, the types of windows he fits the ball into, the fact that, like you mentioned, he hasn't been doing it with a bunch of all-pro receivers. And so, to me, I think you broke it down great, but both of these guys have one thing about them, and it's different, that they have, unlike almost anybody in NFL history. For Brady, it is that, and I hate to use this cliche term, but that it factor, whatever came with him after winning that first Super Bowl, has followed him every step of his career. He was not Tom Brady that year. I know people are like, oh, they didn't draft Tom Brady as Tom Brady. He wasn't even Tom Brady in 2001 yet. Mm-hmm. He had one touchdown pass the entire playoff run. But the moment, it reminds me, the moment Adam Vinatieri kicked that field goal, Brady got something that is so valuable in sports, which is the removal of narratives that surround guys later in their careers. I think Peyton Manning, for how long And how many playoff games did it potentially affect him that the narrative was, man, this guy comes up short in the postseason. Mm-hmm. This guy can't get it done. Like, Brady got that removed from him before he was great. And so he didn't ever have to worry about the is he a winner narrative. Can he come through in these spots? And the only other guy I can think of that had that it factor at that level is Joe Montana. But Joe Montana was doing it, obviously, with higher-level offensive talent throughout his career and didn't do it as long as Brady. And then for Rodgers, he can make every throw at every arm angle from every place on the football field, unlike anyone I've seen except for maybe Dan Marino. Like, as far as the ability to make every single throw to every spot on the field, and what Rodgers can do better than any super elite quarterback that I've ever seen is do it on the move. Like, mm-hmm. Steve Young, I guess, is a guy that comes to mind that could do it.
And that's it.
And that's about it. The guy that could be out on the run and throw a strike as if he had a perfectly clean pocket. I think Rodgers is the most talented guy to ever play the position. Brady's the most accomplished. And
you're talking about arm talent.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
Because there's a difference.
Correct. It's an important clarification. I think he has more arm talent than anyone to ever play the position. And Brady obviously has done it for a longer time at a higher winning level than anyone to ever play the position.
When you look at two guys that are just so talented and so gifted at their position and at their sport, you have to say, well, is there something that they could get better at? And it's hard to find it with these two guys. Obviously, when you're looking at Tom Brady, it's his age. It's not a big factor. We questioned his age last year, and he seemed to, you know, make everyone look kind of silly for doing that. But for Aaron Rodgers, I wonder what you guys think about his durability. He did miss 16 games or so over the last couple of five seasons, I think. He's coming off the collarbone injury. If the question is, hey, can he still play as effectively if he stays in the pocket and doesn't expose himself? Is he still the same quarterback? Where do you stand on that?
Well, Aaron Rodgers, his overall athleticism, his ability to be able to escape rushers, his ability to be able to generate first downs, he doesn't play football reckless. So anyone who got hit like Aaron Rodgers got hit, they'd be hurt. All right? So Tom Brady, if he had run out the pocket and my man Anthony Barr.
Lands on him.
On him from the Vikings. I mean, linebacker 6'5", 250, you're going to be hurt. So it's not as if guys are going to get injured in football, but all injuries don't lead to do you question his durability. Like, Aaron has played the game at such a high level. He's had a couple calf strains. He's had the collarbone. Those things, you can't do anything for broken bones. And there's nothing you can do to prevent it.
And there's only been, listen, he missed seven games in 2013, and he missed more than half of last season. Those are the only times in his career since he's been the starter, he hasn't played 15 or 16 games. If I'm going to critique one thing about Aaron Rodgers, who, again, I said it off top, I think he has the most arm talent of any quarterback I've ever seen. It's shockingly few comeback wins. Like, for some reason, now maybe this ain't on him, maybe that's a team thing, but for a guy who has the jaw-dropping numbers, when you look at Aaron Rodgers, like the number of times he's done what Brady became known for, which was the ability to, in a tie game or a game your team's trailing, bring them back, Rodgers doesn't have that on his resume.
I think that's more of a team thing. If you look at New England and how they calculate and how they play great situational football, it has a lot. Brady's getting a lot of credit for some of the best kickers ever.
Sure.
He's getting credit for Bill Belichick managing the defense. How many times has the defense turned them over? They gave him a Super Bowl against Seattle. They gave Tom Brady gets credit on his resume. Belichick gets credit. But the defense and their ability to play all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams, yeah. You can't fault Aaron for that when their defense is not stopping people at the end.
Because part of a comeback has to be you get the ball back.
Yeah.
That has to be the defense.
Or you
got to
stop
the ball back. Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
The defense stops them, so
yes,
you get the ball back.
All right. So you have one game. You could pick one quarterback between these
two.
Who do you guys pick to win yourself one game?
It's easy for me. I got to go with Aaron Rodgers. Because to me, when you're starting any type of equation and it's involved in sports, a lot of times that do with the talent. All right? I'm going to take the best player on the field. And there's nothing that Tom Brady does better than Aaron Rodgers. And there's a bunch of things that Aaron Rodgers does better than Tom Brady. That's throwing the ball on the move. That's taking care of the football. And if I need a guy to squeeze one in, who would I much rather do that? Aaron Rodgers would be there.
If you had said one season, my answer would be Aaron Rodgers. For one game, I'd take Brady over anybody ever. And there's no wrong answer here, but if you, and I know we'll talk about this throughout the show, like, you look at what Brady's done in the second half of the last three Super Bowls he's been in. Just the and I understand they didn't win against Philly, but the what he did against Atlanta, what he did against Seattle, like, Brady, there are certain guys in sports, this is part of the Michael Jordan legacy, that whether, no matter what the numbers are, whatever it is, you're just like, man, I just trust him more than I trust anybody in that one game. For one game, I'd say Brady. For one season, Rodgers.
Yeah, one game, 1 minute, one play, Aaron Rodgers. And the reason why, he can run the offense more off-schedule than Tom Brady. What if I'm playing in this one game a team that's going to blitz me a lot? All right? Both of them are very good throwing the ball against the blitz, but Aaron Rodgers' overall athleticism, it breaks down the defense, gives the defense more problems. So any type of defense, you play zone defense, I want Aaron. You got a blitzing defense, you're going to get after the quarterback, I want Aaron. It's going to be a tight game, I'm going to take Aaron.
And let me just follow up real quick. Is he potentially your answer if the question is not just Rodgers versus Brady, but Rodgers versus NFL history?
Oh, no. You got no. Okay. Don't get carried away.
Okay, all right.
If you give me one guy to win a game, I'm going with Cool Joe Montana.
Okay, all right, got
all right?
It. Okay, all right. Just wanted to see.
He wasn't on the board.
We're going to have it again. Eric Mangini is going to join us, and we'll discuss this further. Coming up, how does Todd Gurley's new contract reset the market for other running backs now? That's next. This is First Things First. Hey, it was a good day to be Todd Gurley yesterday. The running back won Offensive Player of the Year last year and finished second behind Tom Brady for MVP. Scored himself a cool 4-year, $60 million contract extension with $45 million guaranteed. That from the Rams. The largest deal ever for a running back. No doubt guys like Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, all these guys are going to be paying close attention to this deal now. Nick, what was your reaction to Gurley resetting the running back market?
Good. He deserves this money. He is a guy that, and there are a handful of guys like this. I think Zeke is one. I think L. Bell has been one. I think David Johnson in Arizona, we forget about him because he dislocated his wrist last year, has been one. That are not your old school two down running backs that are bruisers, that are likely to have the shortest of the short careers. They are valuable in the receiving game. They can be on the field all three downs, and they are difference makers. And too many guys, I felt, were not being paid commensurate with production. They were being paid commensurate with their position. And Todd Gurley obviously supersedes that. Like, Todd Gurley is a difference maker. And so I think he deserves to get paid. I think if Zeke, assuming he can stay clean off the field and keep up his level of production, he will as well. And I think L. Bell wanted a long-term deal, but he's going to have made $26 million over the last 2 years. He's already getting paid and will continue that trend. I understand why there's not a long list of these guys, and it's not going to be every running back. But for the special running backs, the guys that are dual-threat running backs, and Gurley's the best of them, I believe, they absolutely deserve this type of money.
How much is Todd Gurley's salary this year, Nick?
This year, it's just under $3 million.
Okay.
So call it $2.5 million.
All right. And then in his option year, the fifth-year option?
$9.5 million.
Yep. Okay. All right. So the reason why I love the deal, Jen, is because he got $57 million guaranteed. And as a running back, I got $57 million guaranteed. The game of life is over with. If he gets hit by a bus, his family and everything, it's over with. And very few times in your professional career, because it's about, man, when am I going to ever have the security? He got it yesterday. And he got it with, you knew they were going to pay him because they had already given Brandon Cook an extension, gave him $16 million. Todd Gurley, sitting there as a running back, said, I'm feeling pretty good about this. If Cooks is getting 16 men, it also speaks to what they're going to do with the defensive linemen as far as Aaron Donald. Like, they've got them stacked up. They're trying to stretch out the money. They're trying to be competitive over the next 3 to 5 years. Oh, that's the same time they have that rookie contract on their quarterback.
Right.
So I like what the Rams are doing. I love the contract for Todd Gurley because, man, $57 million guaranteed as a running back. Because the truth of the matter is, people say, well, man, that's a long deal. He's got 2 years left.
It's really
He's
6 years.
He's got a 4-year deal. Yeah. But if I play 3 good years, which means the remaining 2 years of this contract I have, 1 year into the extension, you know something? As a young player, he's going to be able to go back in there if he wants to.
Right.
So I like the deal. I don't believe running backs are going to get what we've seen the other skilled guys. We're going to have a few guys that are going to get paid. But to think that this is going to reset the market for pro football, no, it's not. Because there's only a few people that can have the conversation, that being David Johnson, that being Zeke, and that being L. Bell. L. Bell, he's already halfway through this part. I would believe he's in his prime on the downside of his prime, and I don't believe someone's going to sign him for a 4 or 5 year contract. So he had to do it the way he did it in Pittsburgh.
What about Gurley as the football player? Is he worthy of resetting the running back market?
When I say reset the market, I'm talking about 4, 5, 6 guys.
Whoever they are, for the very, very top.
What it does is the average salaries of the top 5 guys, but you need at least 5 guys, because typically a team's not going to tell you you're the best at your position. They're going to say, you know something, we consider you be one of the top 3, top 5 guys. Okay, no problem. That's what we'll do. Give me the average of the top 5 guys. Right. So he's only going to reset it for the elite players.
Absolutely.
They are not resetting it for the position.
Not at all. Not for the position.
Because teams aren't changing. We don't have 28 teams that say, I got one running back.
And because most running backs in this league are not 3 down backs, are not incredible threats in the receiving game, and he was the offensive player of the year last year. He was a guy who led the NFL in yards from scrimmage and led the NFL in touchdowns. He is a special player. So that stands to your question. He's the best all-around running back in the league, in my eyes. Now, if people want to say, I think it's Zeke, I think it's L. Bell, like, we are parsing, but I think you can make the strongest argument for him. If he wasn't going to get paid, then you start to wonder who the hell is. Like, if Todd Gurley can't get it coming off the year he had, then who can? Now, Todd Gurley getting it does not mean that Kareem Hunt's going to get it, right? It doesn't mean that Alvin Kamara all of a sudden can say, oh, this is going to be the, even though those are good players, you've got to get to the very top of it. But we now, the top of it was LeSean McCoy's $8 million. Like, and LeSean McCoy's a very good player, by the way. He's a 3 down back as well. He's just in the later part of his career. And so Gurley, I think, at least shows that it's attainable for guys that are, I know they are running backs, but they are, just like some tight ends kind of change the way that position's been played, they are changing, for a few guys, the way teams use the running back position.
And do we agree those few guys are guys like David Johnson, maybe Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott? Who else? I mean, would those be the 4 guys?
Yeah, those are
there?
The only guys. You need more guys to really be able to change the market, but those are the top guys. Those are the guys that we have seen that modern-day football is not going to affect their career because their ability to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield and because of their overall size. All of them are nice size running. All these running backs besides Shady are above 6 foot, which is not typical for a running back. So you can also use them in blitz pickup. That's how they become 3 down players.
The other aspect when we talk about paying running backs, it's not only, though, about whether the 3 down backs, how effective they are. If everyone in the NFL, if everyone in sports, but stay the NFL, was just on 1-year deals, if everyone was on a year-to-year deal, then you would see guys at the running back position make some guys secondary receiver type money. It's the length of the career that is also a big part of, because everyone's signing multi-year deals and it's the shortest career lifespan, right?
Yeah, that's one part of it. The other part is other teams see teams have running backs by committee and they see them winning football. So why should I pay a guy $15 million? And I watch New England, $15 million. Tom Brady's making $4 million. They can do their whole backfield in 15 minutes.
Right.
You know, so the success that NFL teams, that prototype is out there. And tell me the big-time running backs that's coming from college football into pro football that are Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, L. Bell. They're not there. So the market and the money won't be there.
Right. All right, let's take a break. Coming up, did Kawhi Leonard finally get some vindication for what happened in San Antonio last season? That's next on First and First. Start your morning brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. DeMar DeRozan spoke out for the first time about his recent trade to San Antonio. Spoiler alert, he's not happy. He said he's still in shock and that he, quote, gave everything I had to the team. It's BS to me. Nick, can you understand DeRozan's frustration?
I do, and I empathize in this regard. DeMar DeRozan is coming to the realization, because a lot of his commentary has been about how hard he tried, how he gave it his all. And I can't imagine for a professional athlete the realization, wait, hold on. I did everything I could. I gave my all, and it wasn't good enough. My best was not good enough for the team to think it's good enough to be a title contender. And that's a tough moment for a guy, for anybody. So I do get his frustration, especially because he said he wanted to be a Raptor for life.
Yeah, I can understand that because he had mentally, he had already put himself in Toronto for a long time. So I can understand that. But he's got guaranteed money. When they lost the way they lost this year, okay, he should have known. They fired the coach. He didn't think it was on the board that they might get rid of him. So that to me, you know, Nick, I don't like that when people don't have perspective on their life and everything. And right there, that was just a not necessarily the right perspective to think that he couldn't be moved. He's not that type of player that wouldn't be traded.
I think he thought he could be moved, but then the GM told him, Masai Ujiri told him he's not going to be moved. So that wasn't great.
Yeah, you can get lied to.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, moving on to Dwayne Wade. Turns out he's got more basketball in him. Just got offered a 3-year deal to play in China. Wade just finished up his 15th NBA season, scoring 11 points a game last year. Nick, any chance D. Wade actually goes to play in China?
I don't think if he goes, I don't think it'd be for 3 years. But I do think there's a chance he goes for 1 year. It's a shortened season. It's a 34-game regular season, The league that's offering him. You also have to keep in mind, D. Wade has a lifetime endorsement deal with a Chinese shoe company. Yeah. And so, I mean, when we are talking about just not just big-time athlete money, but big-time mogul money, the ability to really entrench yourself in that Chinese market, I think it's something he'll consider.
I'd love to see him go there to China because I want to see what his wife, Gabrielle Union, because she used to tweet some nice, juicy stuff. Now, we move him to a different continent.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she might really miss him. Yeah, she might.
You don't think she'll go with him?
So this is how benefits us.
You only, Gabby.
Living in Los Angeles or Miami, I think that, hey, D-Wade, go get that money. I'll be waiting for you.
Okay.
I think she'll have a couple visits and everything, but just
check it out.
Maybe
they shoot Bad Boys 3 out there.
Moving on to the NFL, thought there was something else coming. After paying Todd Gurley, the Rams are reportedly simultaneously working on a deal for Aaron Donald. Rams general manager Les Snead said about Donald's deal, each situation is different. So many details, Les. Thank you for that. CeCe, you think Aaron Donald gets paid before the season starts?
They got no choice. They got no choice based on what they've done. Brandon Cook signed him to an extension after trading for him, $16 million a year. He's not as good as Aaron Donald. Todd Gurley, running back. He got 2 years left on his contract. So for someone to come and move in front of you in the line when Aaron Donald was the first in line, oh, no, Les Snead them. They're going to get him signed.
And
last year he missed all the training camp, was defensive MVP. All right? They franchised him. They know they got to pay Aaron Donald. And this is Los Angeles. They got to put some people in those seats up there.
And this is going to be the hardest of the contracts to get done, by the way, though. Because they could go to Todd Gurley and be like, hey, you got 2 years left. Guess what? We want to extend you, and it's not going to be that difficult of a negotiation. Similarly with Brandon Cooks, year left, he's on his third team, wants some stability. Aaron Donald feels, justifiably, I'm the best player in the entire sport defensively. I am going to break every record for every defensive player, guaranteed dollars, total dollars, per year salary. So this is going to be a tough negotiation. I do think they've backed themselves into a bit of a corner with what they've done with the other players, though.
They wouldn't have signed the other players without knowing how much money they're going to have to pay Aaron Donald. You're not a championship team if you don't sign your best player.
The Dallas Cowboys open up camp today. They'll look to bounce back from their 2017 season where they went 9-7 and missed the playoffs. All right, Nick, what's the biggest question mark you think facing the Cowboys this season?
Whether they have any playmakers on that offense not named Ezekiel Elliott, period, point blank. Do they have a single receiver that can approach 1,000 yards? Do they have a single tight end that can approach 600 yards? Like, these are real questions about this football team that we do not know. I know, listen, David Irving's suspended. They got questions defensively. I get that. It's, to me, all about the playmakers not named Zeke.
And the reason why it's about the playmakers is it's going to help that defense out. That's not, it's an undersized defense. They're going to move around, try to get after the quarterback. Young secondary, try to create some turnovers. They want to play. And they want to play about 28 minutes a game. You know, if they can, they're a better defense because they're undersized. That wide receiving core, all lights, all attention will be on them. Cole Beasley, little rapper, we're checking you out. Yeah.
All right, finally,
quickness.
Sam Darnold didn't report to the first day of New York Jets training camp. He has not finalized his contract and doesn't want to risk injury in practice. See, how big of a deal is this?
Well, you can't report without a contract.
Right, but how big of a deal is that he's not there, that the contract's not done?
It's not a big deal. They're going to get him signed. Like, you draft a guy in that slot, you know. Baker Mayfield got signed yesterday. He was the top. So now we've got a bunch of – so they start slotting him. You know, we know his selection. We know when he was selected. Baker was number one. That's the most important guy. Then the money will start to fall down. I believe they'll get him done. They'll get him done in the next 36 hours.
As long as that part's true, then this won't be a big deal. If he is, because this is when rookies are supposed to report to camp, as long as he's there for once the full camp is a full go, then I don't think it's a big deal either. With the last time we saw a rookie miss extended time in this system was Joey Bosa with the at the time they were the San Diego Chargers, and the Chargers have a history of really trying to squeeze their rookie draft picks, their first round picks. This seems to typically come down because they are slotted to offset language, which is an odd thing to be worried about when you draft a quarterback, because all the offset language is if we cut you and another team picks you up, do we get some of the relief on your guaranteed money? But if they cut Sam Darnold, the number three overall pick, before his four-year rookie contract's up, then it's been a total abject.
And then money is not the biggest issue.
Right, then money's not the problem. But what I do know is this. It's not like Roquan Smith, who was seventh in the draft, the linebacker the Bears drafted. If it takes a week for him, he's still going to be able to fit in and come in. Sam Darnold is in the competition, I believe, to be the week one starting quarterback. So if it takes longer than the 36 hours, then all of a sudden he is at a deficit there. So if it gets done today, tomorrow, it's not a big deal. If we're talking about this Monday, then his ability to be the week one starter, I think, is severely hampered.
All right, we shall see over the weekend. Moving on to the latest with the San Antonio Spurs. Danny Green was included along with Kawhi Leonard in the trade to the Raptors, but it turns out he had another thing in common with Kawhi. Green says he played with a groin tear last season, one that went undetected by Spurs medical staff, similar to Kawhi's situation with his quad injury. CC, is the Spurs mishandling of Danny Green's injury sort of vindication for Kawhi, if you will?
It might be vindication. Other people might feel good about it today, but I don't. I mean, it's not new to me. I knew Kawhi was hurt. I wouldn't question an athlete's integrity. Were they hurt? Weren't they hurt? When he went for the second opinion, he was hurt. I've been telling you guys all season, Kawhi cannot play. It's the reason why he's not there. It's the reason why he's not on the bench, all right? Because he got misdiagnosed by the San Antonio Spurs. So Danny Green, this doesn't do anything for me. Medical staffs do this all the time. They miss on players. Typically, you just don't hear the players speak out or say anything. And Danny Green, if he was in San Antonio, you know what he'd be saying? Nothing. He wouldn't have mentioned it, wouldn't have said anything about it and gone on about his career. So he mentioned it because he was trying to help Kawhi out, trying to, so people might understand, this also happened to me at a different degree. So no, it doesn't. I was on the story. I knew Kawhi. I knew that he wouldn't be out there unless he was injured. And that was Kawhi's situation. So, no, I don't feel like Kawhi is justified today.
Well, for you, because you were so close to it, I understand that. But you also know that there are people, fans, viewers, whomever, that maybe saw what you were saying and says, man, I believe the Spurs. Like, I know Chris Carter saying this stuff, and you weren't the only one. But I know Chris Carter and some other people saying this stuff. I don't believe them. I think Kawhi is milking this thing. This, to me, is absolute public vindication for Kawhi Leonard, because it's the same medical staff, because it is the same people that Kawhi is saying they misdiagnosed me. Danny Green, with no bitterness, by the way, Danny Green, it was like at the 35-minute mark of a podcast, he mentioned it almost offhandedly and then said, but I love the Spurs. I love the doctors. I know they were doing their best. Like, he is still a Spur for life to a degree, even though he got traded. But this is a big deal what happened to him. Danny Green could have been a free agent this offseason. Okay, like people might not know that because they're like, oh, he got traded, because he opted in to his player deal. Like, if you have a guy who is not looking at max deals, there is a constricted free agency market, and if he's playing through an injury, if he is potentially aggravating an injury, if he is now going into what will be his free agent year not fully healthy because something wasn't dealt with in a timely fashion, that can cost a guy millions of dollars. And so I think when it's the same medical staff, when it's the same people that Kawhi had to deal with, of course this is relevant to what happened with Kawhi Leonard, at least in my eyes, because it lets the public know this wasn't just, oh, Kawhi wants to get to Los Angeles and by any means necessary, oh, he can't play through his quad injury. He said he was misdiagnosed by people that we now know misdiagnosed Danny Green.
Well, it's a very difference in how the two athletes mishandled or handled the situation, if that's the case.
But Danny Green never went and got the second opinion.
So then that's my question to you. Do you think athletes have a right to always go, have a right, should go get a second opinion every time they're diagnosed by a team?
In the prime of my career, there's a gentleman named Harlan Selznick. He was one of the doctors for the Dream Team. He's also one of the doctors for the Miami Heat. Every x-ray I ever taken, at some point in my career, I sent it to Dr. Selznick to review and to give me his opinion on what he thought was the best way to move forward. Your body is your moneymaker. I don't expect anyone. The doctor works for the team. All right? I work for myself. I'm an independent contractor. All right? So I have to do what's best to keep my body so that I can make money. Because as soon as my body fails me, I'm not going to be able to make money. So Nick and the rest of the general public that thought, oh, wow, man, we got another guy here. Wow, that justifies Kawhi. Kawhi, what elite athlete have we seen fake an injury and not play? All right? You tell me a story of a guy who's an elite player that's done that. I don't know the story. So for me, I've been around team sports and stuff, but no, the doctor can get it wrong. I knew he was wrong in the Kawhi thing, and Danny Green, just because he had a groin injury and decided to play through it, because he's also at a different stage of the career. He's a different type of player. The demand for him is totally different, and he had the player option. So they were already down their superstar. He was trying to push his way through it the way athletes do.
But it's not just that he had a groin injury and played through it. He was told his groin injury was X and it was actually Y. If he had the full information.
I believe these things happen more often because the doctor works for the team. He knows who's injured. He knows who's available. And some of these injuries based on guys can have a pain tolerance and a threshold different. There is no one injury. This is going to knock all guys out. Guys are different. So when you have the player option and you're the type of role player like Danny Green, I could see why he pushed through it and decided to stay on the court.
Oh, see, so because he has the, just for the record, just so people understand what I'm saying, because he had the player option, if I'm Danny Green and I get the full diagnosis, I say, oh, I would like to get this fully fixed as soon as possible. I can opt into my money next year, and then when I'm going to be a true free agent, I'm going to be as far removed from this injury as possible. He's now months behind where theoretically he could have been. But on the team doctor stuff, I don't think we have to ascribe nefarious motives to, like, oh, they work for the team, not the player, so they're not going to give them. Listen, guys make mistakes. And I know that every team in pro sports says we have the best doctors in the world. Well, that's flatly impossible. How many teams in professional hockey, baseball, basketball, football, just in this country? We're talking about what? About 130 teams, plus top-level college programs, right? All of those entities claim we got the best doctors in the world. Well, one of them's the 150th best doctor amongst pro sports, right? Just by definition of it. So I do think that what C did, more athletes should consider just standard protocol and not like it's betraying the team.
Getting a second opinion.
Getting a second opinion. That is not like going out.
I have a contract with the team. The team don't own me.
Right.
All right? I'm always doing what's in my best interest. I don't care nothing about the team. I don't care nothing about the team. I look Dr. Fisher in his face and be like, Doc, send that stuff down to Dr. Selznick. I dare you to say something. And he was the Dream Team doctor. Michael Jordan and all of them. Okay, good. Send my x-ray down to my doctor.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, the Warriors have a warning for the rest of the NBA. Wait till you hear this. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with former NFL coach Eric Mangini. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Coach.
How are you?
Nice to see you.
Good to be seen.
It's good. It's good. Our pleasantries out of the way. We'll talk.
Your energy is overwhelming me right now.
Are you saying it's not that much?
Well, I mean, I'd like a little bit more.
Oh, my gosh. Woohoo!
Great to see you, Coach.
Did you guys hear about Darrell Revis? This is out of control.
Thank you.
Darrell Revis is officially not going to be negotiating any more new NFL contracts for himself, asking for more money, even though his deal isn't up. He did sign a one-day contract to officially retire as a member of the New York Jets yesterday. In his first stint with the Jets, he was named to 3 first-team All-Pros and 4 Pro Bowls. He'll assuredly go down as one of the greatest to play the cornerback position.
It took a lot of work, you know, week in and week out, you know, to prepare and, you know, play at the highest level. And, you know, covering some of the toughest receivers, you know, in the world. As I look at it now, as I take some time to really assess what I've done and what really happened, it's amazing. It's amazing. You know, you leave a legacy behind that you know, players can follow. They can mimic. They can study your film study as well. I mean, as a kid, I've studied tons of guys, Daryl Greens, the Deion Sanders, the Ty Laws of the world. So, you know, the next wave is coming, and during my tender here, I try to do the best I could with my opportunities.
All right, Coach, you drafted Darrell Revis. You know more than anyone what his value was, especially as a young player coming into this league. What made him such an elite cornerback?
Well, I remember going through the process, and when you start the draft process, you look at measurables first. So do they have the right height? Do they have the right weight? Do they have the right speed? And Darrell ticked off all those boxes, all the things that you look for in that one area. And then we moved to the production, and you watch them on tape, and with cornerbacks, can they play in the deep part of the field? Can they play man-to-man, and will they tackle? And usually the tackling is an issue with quarterbacks, but Darrell was outstanding as a run support player. So you're excited, then you think, okay, what's he going to be like intangibly? What type of person is he going to be? And we did the research from whether it was high school coach or his college coach, people who had dealt with him, bringing him in for visits, getting to know him, that checked out. So then you started looking at is there any chink that you can see in this armor? And after we checked all those boxes, he was the only guy that had boxes checked across the board.
Yeah.
And we knew collectively we had to figure out a way to go up and get him.
So that's the important point. Is you not only drafted him, you traded up to get him. He was a guy, and we were talking off the air. You guys, the night before, had basically decided that you guys had a deal worked out where if this specific player is available, you're going to make the move to go up and get him.
Yeah, so we had talked to Carolina, said, if our guy is on the board when you guys are drafting, this is what we're willing to trade. Are you willing to do it? Yep, Darrell's on the board at that point. And you're still nervous because you're thinking, okay, maybe they're going to change their mind.
Right.
We call, they're willing to make the trade. We make the switch, we get Darrell. And it's funny, too, in those rooms. And Chris, you know, sometimes people say, well, you can get this cornerback, you can get that cornerback, you can get this receiver, you can get that receiver. Like, they're interchangeable parts. And even though they both may be first-round talents, the difference between one level of first-round talent and the other level of first-round talent is so dramatic. So we knew that we wanted to get him.
Did you have any idea at the time, I mean, when you're drafting a player, do you ever think longer than what that first year is going to be like? Do you ever say, you know, this guy's, there's like something about this guy, there's something really, really special, or is it hard to really pick that up from when you're going through the draft process?
Well, you go through that process, but at the end of the day, they're young kids and they're human beings, so you don't really know till you get in the building exactly who you have. You know, I love Darrell's mom and the support that she gave, and she was very demanding. And it was a situation where I knew if there was ever an issue, I could always chat to her that first year, and she would make sure that things got straightened out. But it's seeing how they respond to coaching, seeing how much of a jump they take. And Darrell held out initially, so we didn't get him early. But when he came in, it didn't take very long to say, oh, okay, he looks a little bit different.
There's not a lot of players playing college football that when you look at them, you can project, man, is he going to be one of the best in his era? No, there's no. Coach being nice, but no. There's certain traits that you like as a football player, size, intellect, how they react to certain situations, the type of surroundings, who are the people, who's the person in their life that's the most important. He thought it was the mom. Who's the person going to be able to broker a deal? If you're a college coach recruiting, that's very, very important to know. But no, you sit there, you're picking them off there. No, you don't know. But there's certain things and certain qualities that are consistent in all the good players. And you try to get as many of those traits as possible. Also, he came into a great situation where they had a pass rush. They had a creative defense around them that you could utilize his skill. That's what I'm telling you. 99% of all the players, the great ones, they need a system. Darrell Revis needed Coach Mangini. He needed his defense and what he knew and the ability to build it. You know something? This guy's special at this. Let me design something around it. And then after that, coaches just tried to duplicate what Coach Mangini had saw and was able to develop and groom to become successful.
And Darrell would get frustrated with me. The first year that you have a player is the only year that you can really control a lot of the things that they do in a way that can help shape them. And we were demanding. We were extremely demanding as a program in terms of teaching these young guys how to be pros and making sure that they got what we believed was the right foundation to carry them through. And I know even going into that second year, there were times where he was frustrated with how much I was pushing. And my feeling to him was, look, I think that there's something really special here, and it's my job to make sure that we get it out of you. And I'm sure at times he's like, all right, enough.
But when that was fully unlocked, what he became was a guy who blanketed essentially a third of the football field. And so from Pro Football Focus, my pal Sam Monson, and I know CC knows the guys over at Pro Football Focus, tweeted this out when Revis officially announced his retirement. Just this picture. And so you see Revis, he's obviously on the bottom side of the screen. And then you see everyone else, and the quarterback, not surprisingly, is not looking Revis's way. But as a defensive coordinator or a head coach, but a defensive-minded coach, what can those 10 other guys do different than on a regular play when you have one guy doing what Revis is doing right there?
Well, Darrell mentioned Ty Law, and Ty Law was the same type of guy as Darrell, where you could put him on a player. And we had Otis Smith at the time in New England, and Otis was a very physical guy, and allowing him to go up and jam guys, knowing that you could push the safety to his half the field, it allows you a level of creativity that you don't have if you've got to give the standard amount of help to each one of the players. When you can take somebody out and then push coverage somewhere else, you can do a lot of things either from a blitzing perspective, from a combo coverage perspective. Now, the disguise element too, I think helps. You could move guys around a little bit more. There's a lot of value.
Yeah, one of the things that Revis did was really special, and you can see in the diagram that Pro Football Focus has there is when you're playing bump and run, there's two routes that you're terrified of. That's the quick slant and that's the quick fade. Darrell would keep himself in a position where he could defend both, being from one position. Well, how do you do that? In bump and run, he would be up on your upfield shoulder to take away the fade, and it's really hard to throw for the quarterback. The quarterback's not comfortable when he looks out there and sees the defensive back on your upfield shoulder. And also, Darrell stayed inside of you enough that you couldn't run the quick slant on him. If you see in the diagram in that man-to-man, the part of the field that is wide open is the middle part, and how can you get there? He's going to try to put pressure. How can I get the middle? And Darrell was able to take away those two immediate adjustments that wide receivers and offenses that are going to make. Take away the quick slant, because that's the thing going to hurt the defense, and try to take away the fade down the sideline. And if you can do those two things, you got that's a great start to being a great player, and that's what Revis was able to do.
Where I think he was very special was at the line of scrimmage. What Chris is talking about, he had a level of patience where a lot of receivers will move, they'll juke, they'll try to get the defensive back off his spot. Darrell's ability to sit there and patiently watch the receiver just move his feet slightly and then get his hands on him eliminated so many of those routes. He won a significant amount of his routes at the line of scrimmage before it ever got started. Now, a guy like Ty Law was different, where Ty would be a little bit all over the place at the line of scrimmage, but he was unbelievable on the stem.
Yes.
Because they were running the route. He could widen guys. He was the best I'd ever coached with that. But Darrell at the line of scrimmage, that level of patience, to me, separates him from
the patience
most guys.
Is very key. We have a saying with wide receivers and DB, first contact wins. If I hit you before you hit me. Darrell Revis was very patient, waiting on the wide receiver, keeping his eyes on his belt buckle, and then reaching out and tapping him before the wide receiver could do a move and create separation.
Why is that, just real quick, why is that so
important? Because it throws off the timing. All right? Quarterbacks are on 3-5-step drops. If I can get a guy to slow him up, not to have him run in a straight line. If you look at the passing tree for wide receivers, all the routes are on a straight line. The stem of it is on a straight line. So the number one thing to do is to get him off the stem of the passing tree.
And if you disrupt a wide receiver at the line of scrimmage, quarterbacks are going to come off him. Because the time is
yep.
So you can win in that first
You can eliminate him from the available options.
Visually.
Just instantly. The quarterback sees that he's not where exactly where he's supposed to be, and now he's on to his second or third read.
Yes.
Really good insight, Coach. Thanks, guys. Coach, we'll see you later on in the show. Coming up, are the Golden State Warriors bad for the NBA? That's what it said in the teleprompter. Next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Former NBA coach and the current associate commissioner of the Big East, Stu Jackson.
What's up, sir? Good to see you.
Good to see you,
Stu.
Welcome. Thanks for having me back.
Of course. You were so great the first time we had to. It was great.
Had to do it again. All right. Memo to the world from the owner of the Golden State Warriors, Joe Lacob. We're still hungry. And no, it is not a knock on the culinary offerings in Oakland. After winning 3 of the last 4 NBA titles, Golden State added former All-Star center Boogie Cousins. Lacob doesn't want his team resting on their laurels anytime soon. He said, quote, that's what people should be worried about. All right, Stu, I ask you, is the Warriors' dominance good for the NBA?
Listen, I mean, this is not the first time you've had an NBA team that has been dominant over this 4-year period. This is not anything new. You know, the Chicago Bulls have done it recently. The San Antonio Spurs have done it. But listen, the greatest part about the Golden State Warriors is they give us a great storyline entering this season, which increases fan interest. That's not a bad thing. You're coming off an NBA that last year increased revenue by 25% over the year before. TV ratings are through the roof. How can anyone make the argument that the Golden State Warriors are bad for the NBA? It's just not true in my mind.
Right. So over the last 30 years, man, like you have seen this, I've seen it. Where the NBA, as far as its popularity and where it stood in the public eye, you know, sometime it was 3, sometime it was 2. There have been some times it's been number 1. But right now, you'd have to be very pleased with the way the game has grown and how popular the game is. Because I don't see it, fan participation, the interactive, even though we might not like Golden State, well, why are we watching it?
Yeah, you know? we're watching for the same reasons you watch the Yankees or the New England Patriots. I mean, they are the best of the best of the gold standards. But you hit it on the head. Listen, over the last 30 years, I mean, the game has continually grown from a league that at one point was considered too black and drug infested. And now we're in a situation today whereby the all-time interest among casual fans is at an all-time high. And I think with the Golden State Warriors, that day when Kevin Durant decided to make that move to the Golden State Warriors, it was on after that. Because at that point, you had a basketball team that had already built itself through the draft with Klay Thompson, Curry, Draymond Green, and added arguably the second-best player in the NBA to that team. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this super team. But it's great, I think, for the league.
Okay, I cannot dispute the league's popularity. And what you're saying about how far the league has come in 30 short years is important. The NBA Finals were on tape delay the year I was born. Like, the way the league has grown, there is no denying that, okay? I absolutely understand that. But the moment that you're mentioning as saying it's now on, they're a super team, they were already a super team. They had won 73 games. They'd won a title. They were up 3-1 in the finals before adding Kevin Durant. And what they've done since then has not, I do not believe that has added fan interest, because what that has done is that has disqualified 85-90% of the league from even being able to trick themselves into thinking I am a title contender. And so that's the part that, yes, the ratings were growing, and they were growing before Durant made the decision. They've continued to grow after that. But I do not think Durant's decision has led to, and the Warriors, this current iteration, has increased the popularity. They have ridden the wave and been a big part of the wave of the NBA's popularity. But one other thing that you said in the beginning, and people just take for granted, that I do not think is factually accurate, which is the NBA's always had this. Not to this length of time, to this degree. Yeah, the Bulls, they won 6 titles in 8 years, but they won 3 and then Jordan went away. And then they won three, and then Jordan went away again. We had the Celtics and Lakers in the 80s. But because you had both of them, it was almost like you were volleying it back and forth. It has not been since Russell Celtics, that run in the 50s and 60s, that we have seen a team potentially over a five-year stretch dominate the league the way the Warriors are. And at some point, to me, it gets the level of, do you go to a movie for the acting? Sure. But I'd prefer it not be spoiled before I walk into the theater. At some point, the suspense about the ending, to me, is important for the fans, and that is what I think this iteration of the team...
But it hadn't affected fans the way it's affecting...
Well, we don't know. The ratings have grown. We don't know what they would be. The counterfactual is, what would the ratings have been if Durant stayed in OKC? Would they have grown even more? Would they have gone down? We don't know. So we can't say for sure it has not affected fans. It obviously has not damaged the NBA's trajectory. That part I'll give you.
Well, then the question I ask you is this going to become the standard now, where there are going to become more super teams, or do you think this is just an outlier situation where it just happened that all these stars ended up on this one team? Because whatever happened in the 50s and 60s with the Celtics, that went away. Then there were the Celtics and the Lakers, and then that sort of went away. Then there was the Chicago Bulls, that sort of died down. But do you think now what we're seeing is this is what it's going to be in the NBA? Because if it isn't, then we're just going to go right back to having more parity.
Well, listen, you have to go back to the fact, and again with Durant, there was an aberration in the salary cap that where you had a spike and it allowed him to join the team at that point, all right? So that's where it started. To me, what has changed among players a little bit is that now, because you have this great basketball team, they're like a magnet. I mean, that's why you get a Boogie Cousins in an era now where the money is a little bit thin. You don't have as high as spikes in the salary cap, and now guys are taking shorter term deals for lesser money, and the first place they go to rehabilitate themselves is the Golden State Warriors, because they have the opportunity to win a championship and obviously help their brand and help their value. So to me, that's what's different than it was in years past. And no longer do we have teams, you know, like when you had Jordan or Tim Duncan, where, look, this is my basketball team.
Right.
Everybody, you come to me. Now there's this cross-section or cross, you know, transportation, pollination of players, to the Golden State Warriors. And to me, that's what's the major difference.
Yeah, the major difference for me is you can't win with one or two superstars. Like, you can't win. Like, that's when you have Kevin Durant join Golden State, so that took it away. I don't think that it's taken away the overall popularity of the league. And people would argue there are certain people that don't want parity. Now, we do want to not know what the result is before we watch the game. But there's a certain... I like everything in its highest level. When I go to the ballet, I want to see the absolute best. When I go to Broadway, I want to see the absolute best. Football, basketball, baseball, I want to be challenged and pushed to be my best. Now, people might not say they don't like Golden State, but let me tell you what it's done for LeBron James, the best player in the world. It has brought the best out in him. I would say if that challenge was not there, I don't know what the ratings would be. I don't know what LeBron's stats would be. But the way he played, it forced the best basketball out of him. And that's something that I have enjoyed.
But here's the thing. It forced the best basketball out of him before KD got there. He had the greatest three-game stretch in his career, and I would argue in the history of the sport, before KD got there. And what we did have in the 90s, even though Jordan, and credit to him for doing it, even though he won it every time he played the full season in that eight-year stretch, you had credibly going into seasons, the Suns, the Sonics, the Jazz, the Pacers on the back end, the Knicks on the front end, the Magic in the middle. You had, what's that, a fifth of the league? A quarter of the league go into years credibly believing we can win the title. Since KD has gone there, here's who has credibly believed they can win the title. The Warriors, the team LeBron was on, and the Rockets last year. That's it. Going into this year, who credibly believes they can win the title? The Warriors, maybe Houston, maybe Boston. I don't know that part's great.
Well, I think it is great because it's going to challenge other NBA teams to find a way over time, may not happen this year, how to beat the Golden State Warriors. And until this point, NBA teams have opted to try to duplicate the Golden State Warriors, and you can't. Mm-hmm. They've drafted well. They've got, you know, three guys in Green, Klay Thompson, and Curry that are unique. You know, kudos to them. So you've got to find a style of play that, you know, beats the Golden State Warriors, and that's the challenge. But listen, we talk about dominance like it's just going to happen. And we forget the fact that the Golden State Warriors during this time were in a situation where Memphis had them down. Mike Conley goes down. This past year, the Houston Rockets look like they're on the way to winning the Western Conference title, and Chris Paul goes down. So there's a lot involved here.
Two playoffs ago.
So they've had amazing injury luck, too.
It's not just going to happen. And I think the challenge for the Warriors is mentally, can they sustain it? We saw a little fleck in their armor last year in terms of just what it takes to get through an 8,200-game season. And I think this year it's going to be the same struggle.
Helps when you replace Kevon Looney with DeMarcus Cousins, too.
Yeah, just like that much. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.